and this is the latest they have had a lead, and they're going to add on to it. Michael Massey has his third hit. All have come with two strikes, and this one is going to be worth two, and now Massey is digging for third, and he's in there with a two-out, two-run triple, and the Royals lead 4-1 in the sixth inning.
Break up the Royals. They avoid being swept by the Guardians before the All-Star break. They salvaged the finale in Cleveland yesterday. 4-1 the final in favor of the boys in blue. Royals 26-65 going into the All-Star break as Ron Yarbrough came back from being hit by a line drive in the face or head. And we were there for that for the Royals bus trip back in May. He returned 6 innings, 6 hits, 1 run, 5 Ks. He's now 2-4 on the season. Scott Barlow came in and to close it out for this 11th save. Kyle Isabel, a home run, his second of the year, a solo shot in the fifth to tie the game, and then had a game-saving catch there in the bottom of the ninth. Michael Massey, 3-for-4 with that two-run triple you just heard, and the Royals win going into the All-Star break. They have the second-worst record in baseball. Only the A's are worse. Royals are 26-65. The A's are 25-67 as the Royals score 3 in the sixth inning yesterday to win 4-1. Before we go to the Royals draft, and they picked 8th overall yesterday, we'll tell you about their first round pick. Some local sports notes passed along to you here on the Sports Ticket. Miley Oost competing in the USA TF Region 9 Junior Olympics track meet this past weekend in Jonesboro, Arkansas. And Miley, as well as many of her Kansas Flyer teammates, qualified for the Junior Olympic Nationals in 2 weeks in Eugene, Oregon. Miley placed second in the 13 and 14 age group in the 800-meter run, and she was a part of a 4x800 relay that placed second as well. And so congratulations to Miley Oost and her teammates on making it to Nationals in Eugene, Oregon. And Miley is the voice you hear on the Oost furniture and cabinetry commercials that we have right here on KD Country 94. Oost Furniture up there in Mankato. So congratulations to Miley and her teammates and making it to Nationals. K18 Baseball Twin Lakes League Tournament in the books. Finished up there in Beloit. The Beloit Red is your league champion. They knock off the Smith Center Red by a final of 7-3. Smith Center Gray took home third, knocking off Russell. And that sets us up for the regional tournament in Concordia for K18 Baseball, taking place tomorrow, Thursday, and also on Friday. The Beloit Red will take on Clifton Clyde at Doyen Field in Concordia at 6:30. Tomorrow night, and then following that game will be Clay Center against Smith Center Gray. FNA Concordia will take on Russell at 6:30 at the Meats Fields there in Concordia, followed by Smith Center Red against Marysville. The semifinals will be Thursday night in Concordia. The championship third place games will be on Friday in Concordia. Kansas State Pee Wee Association District Baseball brackets are released, and all of this is available to you at ncksports.com. Go there and print out the brackets. Pike Valley, the 1 seed. At Pike Valley, Cortland will be hosting this tournament. Beloit Ironbirds, the 4 seed, will play tonight at 6:30 against Concordia American Legion. Bottom half of the bracket, Concordia Chevy Buick will take on the Belleville Lions at 8 o'clock. And that's the district Pee Wee tournament there in Cortland. Pike Valley hosting that one. The semifinals Thursday, and the championship at third place games will be on Friday. Also, the District 2 State Pee Wee District Tournament taking place in Smith Center. Osborne's the 1 seed. Concordia Knights are the 2 seed. They get byes. They won't play till Thursday in Smith Center. Tonight, doubleheader. Number 4, Wakanda will take on the 5 seed Smith Center at 6:30 tonight. And following that at 8 o'clock will be the Blake Grasshoppers, a 3 seed, versus the 6 seed Rock Hills. So there's a look at area baseball tournament brackets for K18 and State District Pee Wee Baseball. All of those brackets, once again, available to you to peruse and look at and print out, ncksports.com.
With the 8th pick of the 2023 MLB Draft, the Kansas City Royals select Blake Mitchell, a catcher from Sinton High School in Sinton, Texas.
And that was the Royals' first-round draft pick yesterday. The number 1 overall pick was Paul Skeens, pitcher from LSU, going to the Pittsburgh Pirates. Royals selecting number 8, and they are no stranger to taking a high schooler this high, having taken their number 5 prospect, Frank Mazzucato, number 7 overall just a couple years ago. Royals perhaps got a very good talent. It's also a money saver. And they did have three picks. There are some people that like this pick. There are others that don't like it, that usually a high-rated catching prospect just doesn't do well or even make it to the big leagues. And the scouting director, Danny Ontiveros, on the draft pick of Blake Mitchell said, and I quote, "I understand the stigma on high school catchers, but I haven't seen a catcher like this before. Mentioned Bryce Harper as a player he reminded him of. For me, it was tough to pass up." Now, the Royals have not been great at drafting and developing players. And that's the key, development. Let's hear from Major League Baseball Network after Blake Mitchell was selected. Here was the feeling by Jay Johnson, who's the manager of LSU, who won the national championship. Blake Mitchell was going to go to LSU, but more than likely he's going to take his money, sign with the Royals. Here was the dialogue on Major League Baseball Network after the Royals took Blake Mitchell, catcher from Texas High School, in there in Texas with the 8th overall pick.
There you have it. The 18-year-old out of Texas off the board next. Back-to-back Texas Gatorade High School Player of the Year. And his numbers back it up. He was an LSU commit, Jim, but he may be on the move.
Yeah, I think Jay knew he wasn't getting him because this is a really special player. You know, there's some teams that are reluctant to take high school catchers. They think it's a risky position. But to me, if you have a player who profiles as a top pick, even if he didn't play catcher, then I'm not worried about that guy being a high school catcher. And that's Blake Mitchell. He can hit for average. He can hit for power. He's up to 97 miles an hour on the mound. It's a big-time arm. If this guy was a third baseman or a right fielder, he'd still be a first-round pick, maybe not number eight. So I love this pick. I don't buy into the high school catching risk if the guy has that kind of talent. And Jay's probably a little bit sad, but again, Jay's had a lot to be thankful for, and I think he knew he wasn't getting Blake Mitchell to Bat Ridge.
Oh, look at this. He has got everybody out in attendance in Texas for this one. Guys, we'll send it back downstairs because, again, the top catcher in his draft class when you look at what the prep options are.
Yeah, Melanie, thank you. Jay, all right, so obviously, you saw this coming.
Right? Yeah, not a surprise.
Not a surprise to you.
Not a surprise at all. This is elite hitting ability, power to all fields. He gets in a squat better than any catcher I've ever seen. He's got an elite throwing arm.
Ever seen?
Yes. If the hitting thing doesn't work out, and I have no reason to believe that it won't, you could also put him on the mound, and he might be one of the best closers in the
So
mound.
Tell me a game, what you saw, where it kind of jumped out at you.
Yeah, Eric Codes last year. He's hitting opposite field home runs against some of the best pitchers in the country. And when I go, I would draft that guy, that usually doesn't work out too well for us.
Now, why important is it about the squat with the catcher? Outside of the obvious.
I think he gets down. I think he can receive pitches well. He gets out of the crouch to throw really well. There's really nothing he can't do very well in a baseball
game. Love the bat. I love the player. I think this kid's a super talent.
So there you go. Major League Baseball Network, their guys, Jay Johnson, manager, LSU, national champions. He's seen this kid quite a bit, and they think it's a great pick. Other people don't think it's a good pick at all. Time will tell. It will take some time to see this kid if he's able to make it to the big leagues. And, you know, the draft, it's a crapshoot sometimes, and that's who the Royals took with their first pick, the 8th overall pick in the first round yesterday. And then with pick 44, the Royals took a right-handed pitcher from another high school kid from Illinois, Blake Walters. He's an athletic, projectable prep right-hander. Used to play basketball as well. Walters' velocities climbed up to 95-96 early in games to go along with a slider that flashes plus, and with more to come as he physically matures. So there's some people that actually really like that pick, maybe better than the Royals' first-round pick. Then with their competitive balance B pick yesterday, number 66 overall, the Royals selected center fielder Carson Rocaforte out of Louisiana Lafayette. And Randy Jazierly follows the Royals, and he says the Royals took this kid at 66. He was ranked number 81 by Kylie McDaniel, number 129 by MLB, number 160 by Baseball America. He wasn't in Keith Law's top 100. I don't know what the Royals are doing. Maybe they'll be proven right. I'll let their track record speak for itself. So Randy Jazierly does not like that third pick by the Royals yesterday at all. We'll see what happens. J.J. Piccolo, the new general manager of the Royals this year, taking over Dayton Moore. We stuck to what we think our identity needs to be. We need to be able to compete on the mound. You need a leader and impact player behind home plate. It's not easy to find. And then we really value outfielders who can cover ground and play the outfield at a high level. Rounds 3 through 10 will be tomorrow. There is no draft today. First round and second round were yesterday. 3rd through 10th rounds tomorrow. And then the rest of the rounds will be, I believe, on Wednesday. So the Royals with three picks, and they really can't afford to miss on these picks when they're right now 26 and 65. You can't continue to be bad and then not develop the guys you draft. You got to draft well, but then you got to develop. I think drafting, I think you can, I don't think you have to, when it comes to drafting, to me, it's more about development. If you're going to pick a guy that's, you know, 30th on the list and he's ranked 50th, you know how you prove people wrong with how it was a good pick and everybody thinks it isn't a good pick? Develop him. I mean, Mike Piazza was a 62nd round draft pick. Albert Pujols was passed on by teams over and over. I think he was a 13th round pick. There are guys that don't get drafted early that end up being great baseball players. So it's more about development than it is drafting, in my opinion. And so I don't care if the Royals are the first overall pick, the 11th pick, or the 31st pick. If they don't develop them, it don't matter. It does not matter. So we will see what happens with these players, and then the Royals have more draft picks coming up tomorrow. Wimbledon is taking place over at the All England Club, and Madison Keys, an American, winning today, lost set 1-6-3, but wins set 2-7-6 in the tiebreaker and 6-2 in the third. So she moves on to, I believe, that would be the quarterfinals now. That was a round of 16. And I'm looking through here to see if there's anybody else of noteworthiness to pass along to that's playing right now or today. I do know that Novak Djokovic is still alive on the men's side. And let's see if I can find... let's see. Here's the draw. So we'll go to the men's singles draw. Yeah, I don't need that. There we go. And Carlos Alcaraz is the number one seed. He is still alive. He is in round four. And Daniel Medvedev is up 2-0 over Laheka. And Eubanks from American tennis players taking on Cespedes, the five seed today. And I'm trying to see. And then Djokovic will play the 17th seed. Djokovic is a two seed, but he has 23 majors. And so he is in the fourth round, and he'll play today. Winner of the fourth round moves on to the quarterfinals. And let me see on the women's side of things real quickly. There we go. Iga Swiatek, she's the number one seed, outlasted Bencic in three sets. She moves on to the quarterfinals. And there's an American, Bakula, I don't know how to pronounce it. She is moving on to the quarterfinals, so that's good for the American side. And I mentioned Madison Keys is moving on to the quarterfinals as well. So two Americans in the final eight on the women's side of the draw in Wimbledon. Okay. Two stories that are disturbing to pass along to you to close out the show today. I'm going to save the Bob Huggins thing for last. I want to jump to this. Northwestern football coach Pat Fitzgerald was issued an unpaid two-week suspension, effective this past Friday, following an investigation into hazing allegations within the program. The investigation, led by former Illinois Inspector General Maggie Hickey, found evidence to corroborate claims made by an anonymous whistleblower regarding hazing activities and events. The investigation began in December, following allegations that football players participated in locker room hazing as part of rituals that may have started at the team's preseason training camp referred to as Camp Kennesaw in Wisconsin. On Saturday, a day after the investigation findings were revealed, the Daily Northwestern spoke with two former players who claimed the hazing often involved coerced sexual acts. A common form of hazing known as running was often used as a punishment for team members, mostly freshmen, that made a mistake in practice or another football setting. A player who spoke with the Daily said an athlete selected for running would be restrained by a group of upperclassmen and a sexual act would be simulated in a dark locker room. It's done under the smoke and mirror of, oh, this is team bonding, but no, this is sexual abuse, the player said. According to the Daily, teammates commonly identified players for running by clapping their hands above their heads around that player, a motion that Coach Pat Fitzgerald allegedly made repeatedly during practices. One player who spoke with the Daily believes that other players interpreted that as Fitzgerald encouraging the hazing. ESPN followed up with a former player on Sunday who confirmed that he and his family had spoken to the school president, who was receptive to hearing from. The ex-player also detailed another aspect of the hazing known as Shrek's List, where players' names would be written on a whiteboard bulleted under categories such as naked bear crawls and naked slingshot. Folks, that's taking hazing way too far. I mean, there's no doubt about it. First of all, you know, if you've been in a sorority or a fraternity house, there's some kind of hazing that takes place. You know, there's a little bit of an embarrassing thing, but it doesn't have to be anything like this. This is taking it to a whole nother level that is abuse. And I can tell you that this has happened right here in North Central Kansas years ago with a high school. And I can tell you that I can tell you a few freshmen that were high schoolers that were the targets of hazing situations. This is not team bonding. It's not leadership. And it sure as heck doesn't lead. It doesn't equate to success on the field. So it's ridiculous. It's a waste of time. And it's unnecessary. And it goes to leadership. It starts, quite honestly, well, first of all, coaches are culpable. All right? Coaches can sit here and act like their head's in the sand. They don't know anything about it. And more than often or not, they do. Now, there might be a chance they don't. But more than likely, they do or they don't want to know about it. Thus, they can claim they don't know about it. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah. No. Don't tell me anything about it. I don't want to know. So thus, it's plausible deniability. And also, it comes to leadership within the players, the seniors. You need good seniors. If seniors are leading things like this, and this has happened in high school, and it's happened in college, if this is the best foot forward that seniors have of being leaders, then they suck as leaders. They're not leaders. That's ridiculous. Those are not leaders. Those are not seniors that should be looked up to at all. You need good seniors to avoid things like this. You need leaders on the team that know that ain't right. We're not doing that here. I'm the captain. I'm one of the captains. We are not doing that type of thing here, whether it's high school or college. No, not going to happen. Okay, you want to take a freshman's keys to his car and drive it around and park it where he can't find it for a little while? That's one thing. But this other stuff that's happening in Northwestern and other places, this is by far not even close to the first time something like this has happened at a university. And it's by far not the first time it's happened with high school sports. And it typically seems to happen with what sport? Football. It's more prominent in football than any other sport. So what makes it acceptable in football? Do you think you're so much better because you're part of the football team that you can get away with that? And if coaches know about it, then what makes you more special than the basketball or volleyball coach or anybody else? It's appalling, it's sick, it's stupid. And there should be no place for it at all in sports. At all. So you need good seniors. I was lucky when I was in high school. I had, well, first of all, the seniors liked me. And I was very respectful to the seniors. I never smarted off or said anything, gave them any lip. Yeah, there might have been a freshman that might have, you know, rubbed the seniors the wrong way and they might have got a wedgie, okay? But that was it. I mean, maybe you shoved the freshman in a locker, maybe, but it wasn't nothing like this. I mean, this is way over the top. And so I was lucky to have seniors that were class acts for the most part. And when I became a senior, I remembered that. And so when I was a senior, we never did anything to the freshman I can think of. Maybe we made the freshman carry our bag or something to the bus for a road trip. I can't think anything other than that. Like, we were teammates. Like, we didn't care if you're a freshman and we're a senior. You know, we might get on you a little bit if we think you can help the team and you're not practicing hard. That's part of being a leader. But you don't have to do hazing. There's no need. We didn't do it. And so we, and this is the thing you need to understand if you're a young person out there. If you're part of a team or organization, when you're one of the leaders, you've got to set the example. You are setting the example. And it does trickle down eventually to those younger people, whether they're juniors, sophomores, or freshmen. They see what you do. And it's no different, or it really is no different than being a parent raising a child, right? If you are a parent and you tell your kids, don't steal, but then you walk into a convenience store and you as a parent steal a bag of M&Ms and shove them in your pocket, or walk out and not pay, or run off from the gas station without paying for gas, and your kid's in the back seat and sees that, what message are you sending? Well, you can't steal. You don't shoplift. Well, you just did. So I know it's okay because you did it, right? Okay, so when you're a senior, and you could say, well, don't, hey guys, we're hazing, but you guys don't do this when you're seniors. Odds are it's going to happen. So you have to be a leader. And I don't think it's being a leader by doing these things. And if coaches know about these things, honestly, I think it should be, especially when it comes to this situation. Northwestern, when we're talking about things, coerced sexual acts happening in the locker room, male football players in this situation doing this stuff, and obviously you've got some horrible leaders on that team, crappy captains, and you've got a coach that needs to go. If all of this stuff is true, and I put if because this is allegedly, we got to wait it out. You know, Duke lacrosse team was accused of rape and a whole bunch of things, and Nancy Grace on whatever channel she was on ripped them left and right, convicted them before they were proven, you know, innocent before proven guilty, and never did have a public apology I ever saw. And she was wrong, and she jumped to conclusions. So we got to be a little bit careful, right? We got to make sure. I mean, perhaps this is made up. I doubt it, but we don't know. But if this is all true, Pat Fitzgerald needs to be fired immediately. As soon as they can prove that this happened, and the president of the school feels very confident that all of this happened, fire him. Or suspend him without pay indefinitely. Right now, he's suspended without pay, what, 2 weeks? So this very well may happen, that he will be gone. And what some people have been talking about is this is for a team that went 1-11. Not that it should matter whether you're a winner or a loser, but Northwestern's only win was against Nebraska, for crying out loud. 1-11. It's unacceptable. It should not happen. It should not happen. And if you are a coach, or you are a captain, or a leader supposedly of the team, you're responsible. Well, I'm a captain, but I wasn't aggressively pursuing this. Well, you're guilty. You're an accomplice. And it's true, there's other players that if they allow it to happen, not only the seniors or captains, they're accomplices too. That's true. But the culture of your program is created from the top, and it works its way down. That's the culture. It is established by the head coach. That is the leader, the CEO of your company, of the program. And listen, if you're a coach and you tell all your players, don't be drinking, you're underage, and all your kids go out drinking and everybody knows they're getting beer and alcohol illegally and partying it up, you might not be able to control everything that they do, but it's still a reflection of you as a coach. And then you got to say, you know what, you're off the team. Maybe we don't even have a team. Everybody wants to party and get drunk. But somebody's got to put their foot down at some point, right? That's called leadership. All right. Now, here's a weird twist to a story. And I have to admit, I didn't see this one coming. Bob Huggins wants his job back. Bob Huggins apparently wants his job back. Where do we begin with this one? Well, let's just tell you some of the facts here. Weeks after Bob Huggins announced his resignation following a DUI arrest, an attorney for the former West Virginia men's basketball coach claims he never formally resigned last month and said Huggins will sue the university if he's not reinstated. In response, West Virginia, the university, announced the hiring, of course, since then, of longtime assistant Josh Eilert, Osborne, Kansas native, as interim coach last month. And the university said it will not reinstate Huggins and will defend itself against any spurious allegations. Last month, Huggins announced his resignation through a statement that said recent actions do not represent the values of the university or the leadership expected in this role. After he had been arrested in Pittsburgh for driving under the influence and registering a blood alcohol content of 0.21%, nearly three times the legal limit. The arrest came nearly 6 weeks after Huggins had used an anti-gay slur during a radio interview that prompted a three-game suspension and a $1 million reduction in salary. According to documents released by the university Saturday, however, Huggins' legal team sent a letter to Gordon Gee, West Virginia's president, on Friday that stated Huggins never officially resigned. The letter also said Huggins entered rehab after his arrest last month and intends to return to his post as head coach of West Virginia when he completes the program. In his letter, which was obtained by ESPN, David A. Campbell, an attorney representing Bob Huggins, said Huggins' resignation correspondence with the school did not come from him, but from his wife, June Huggins. Campbell claims Huggins never gave West Virginia a formal resignation. The university on Saturday released an email that was sent from an account belonging to June Huggins, Huggins' wife, to Athletic Director Ren Baker the day the head coach announced his resignation that said, and I quote, "Please accept this correspondence as my formal notice of resignation as West Virginia head basketball coach and as notice of my retirement from West Virginia University effective immediately," end of quote. The school also said it had ongoing conversations with Huggins' legal representatives, not Campbell, in recent weeks that suggest the former coach understood he had resigned and had even been discussing the next steps of the resignation and retirement with Bob Fitzsimmons and James Rocky Ginola, two attorneys who have historically represented the former West Virginia coach as recently as Friday. In his letter to West Virginia, Huggins' attorney Campbell said the school can either reinstate Huggins after a breach of contract or deal with a legal battle. The school responded and said it will not reinstate Huggins. Notwithstanding any response and no uncertain terms, the university will not accept Mr. Huggins' revocation of his resignation, nor will it reinstate him as head coach of the men's basketball program. Statement goes on to read, "Moreover, if Mr. Huggins or his counsel attempts to publicly suggest that he somehow did not resign and retire from his position, please be advised that the university will swiftly and aggressively defend itself from these spurious allegations." Couple things here. This is a really, really bad look. I don't know how Bob Huggins can make him look. I like Bob Huggins. I think he'd be a cool guy to sit down with. I've heard good things about what this man has done off the court and what he's done for his players. And Bob Huggins is wrecking all of this by continuously making mistakes. This is the third mistake. The first mistake was using anti-gay slurs on a radio interview. And he did it not once, but multiple times. So that shows a bit of the character of the man from that standpoint. Okay. Two, driving under the influence. He got a DUI, three times the legal limit. Didn't even know where the hell he was when he's pulled off by cops. And this was like he'd been drinking all afternoon and he's pulled over in the evening, not 2 a.m. Also, he got a DUI that cost him his job at Cincinnati. So how many times did he drive drunk and wasn't caught? Or how many times was he caught and he got to, who knows what he did to get out of it? Listen, I'm starting to lose a lot of respect for this man. And I don't think I'm the only one. And the other thing, too, this is what comes across to me. This is mistake number three by Bob Huggins. This is selfish. This is super gigantic selfishness. If you really, really care about the university, as you say in all these statements and all your apologies, if you really, truly care about the university, if you really care and appreciate Josh Eilert, Go away. Go away. You're getting to the point, Coach Huggins or ex-Coach Huggins, to where nobody's going to want to let you around the program whatsoever. Like, if you would have just taken your medicine here, which it looked like you had, I would imagine Josh Eilert wouldn't be sitting here saying, well, you know, Bob Huggins came around, you know, to see how practice was going. I don't think the university would have a major problem with it. I don't think Josh Eilert would have a problem with it. And I can't speak for Josh or anybody else, but if I were Josh Eilert right now, and anybody on that coaching staff, I'd be like, oh, dear God, what's next? Like, we're trying to put closure on that. We are trying to move forward. We're trying to get guys to stay at West Virginia. We're trying to recruit guys to play at West Virginia. We're trying to fill our scholarships, all right? We are trying to compete in the Big 12 that now is going to have 14 schools in it this fall. We thought we had this in the rearview mirror. This is just me. But if I was on that coaching staff right now, I would be perturbed at the very least at what's happening. Bob Huggins, Coach Huggins, with all due respect, go away. You have made the mistakes. You need to take responsibility for them. You say you do. And then you go and act like you should just, like nothing happened. And Dusty mentioned this before. The law, what was it? It was in Pennsylvania where he got this, if I remember correctly, a DUI. The law is very, very easy against people with DUIs. In fact, Dusty said there's a chance that it might even get wiped from his record, which is ridiculous and horrible. And this is how bad our laws in this country are when it comes to drunk driving. And I don't want him to go down this whole Pandora's box about the laws in the country and the states and how you... I've went through it already on this show. It is ridiculous. I have a simple policy, and it's not that hard to enact. Your third DUI, I don't care where you live in this country. Your third, I don't care what state. Your third one, you're done. And I think that's embarrassing for me to even say that. I would say your second one, you should be done. You can say, well, you know, everybody deserves a second chance. Okay, your second one, you're done. But if you want to be lenient, and I think it's lenient, three strikes, you're out. But now what happens if you kill people, your first two DUIs? Well, then odds are you're not driving. I would hope to God you're locked up. So this comes across to me as super selfish. Super selfish. West Virginia stood by him with his words, not the university's words. I watched the podcast, the radio interview. I heard what Bob Huggins said, and it made me cringe. And I knew he was in trouble as soon as I heard it. And yet, somehow he survived it. Most coaches would have been done on the spot. West Virginia stood by Bob Huggins. They had to do something to him, whether they wanted to or not, in regards to getting counseling and, you know, learning about what he seemed to be maybe not educated on, so forth and so on, right? And they changed his contract because they kept him on. That was a that was what Bob Huggins needed to do to keep his job. He had to agree on, okay, I'm going to take less money. My contract's going to be shortened here. It's basically a one-year deal. Well, you know, Bob, you're the one that created that situation because of your words, not the university speaking for you. And Bob Huggins apologized, seemed to take full responsibility. Then 6 weeks later, he gets stinking drunk and doesn't know where he is. Once again, West Virginia didn't give him a whole bunch of free beer and said, hey, go on a joyride, Bob. Go to Pennsylvania, but tell everybody you think you're in Columbus. You're not even in the same state when you come up with that one. Not a nearby town. Three times the legal limit. So you did that as well. The university didn't make you do any of this. This is all your own stuff. It's like Bob Huggins is committing career suicide, not once, but twice. The university had no choice but to let the man go. And here's the thing. The university didn't didn't have to do what they did. They could have just fired his butt right then and there. They didn't. They allowed him to resign. They allowed this to look a little better than it would have been for most coaches. To me, from the outside looking in, West Virginia has done about as much as they possibly could and stuck their neck out about as far as they possibly can for Bob Huggins. And he repays them with this. This is his... Listen, this on the surface looks to me like a person that has a lot of issues he's got to fix. He's either... Because now if he's bitter at the university for forcing him or telling him you need to resign or we're going to fire you, and he's bitter about it, you need to look in the mirror and point the finger at yourself. The university didn't get you fired or forced you to resign. You did that all by yourself with your words and your actions. And now Bob Huggins has an attorney that has the audacity to say, well, I didn't formally resign. Thus, there's going to be legal consequences. And Coach Huggins expects to be reinstated and coaching this team when he gets out of rehab. What world do you live in? Whatever Bob Huggins is paying this attorney, it's too much. Let's just for fun's sake here, why don't we just say, let's say that happens. Let's say they have this gigantic legal case. And they can prove that, no, we didn't formally resign. How is this going to work for Bob Huggins if he was reinstated today? How is it going to work for the coaching staff, including Josh Eilert, who is the interim coach that's made all these plans, and they've got their staff, and they've mixed it all around? What's it do for recruiting and players? Do players want to be a part of a program where this coach is somehow forced his way back in, but you know as soon as the university can legally do it, they're going to be sore at the guy, and they're going to axe him as soon as possible? This is toxic. Bob Huggins is doing no favors whatsoever for the university that he claims to love. He's not doing anybody favors for the people that he supposedly cares about on his coaching staff. This is selfishness 101, in my opinion. Now, you can look at it and say, well, you know, if he didn't formally resign, he's got a case. Listen, I would listen to that totally if this was a university that was forcing him to resign for something that he allegedly did but didn't do and there was no evidence of it. Like, for instance, Pat Fitzgerald might have more of an argument if they're telling him at Northwestern, hey, man, you've got to quit, resign, or we're going to fire you. And then he says, well, I'm not going to. Northwestern fires him. And then Pat Fitzgerald comes back and a few months later sues the school because these allegations are not proven to be true with the hazing. Now, there's a case. To me, that's a legitimate, really good case. This one... Dude, I don't know how in the world there isn't something in the contract. I didn't formally send in my resignation to West Virginia. You know what? If I'm West Virginia and I don't know all the legal matters here, I'm West Virginia. I'm like, okay, cool, Coach Huggins, we understand. You're fired. Is that better? Because you can't tell me there's not. How is there not something in the contract that says he can't be fired for getting a DUI? They can't be fired for the anti-gay slurs. I mean, cause, right? Fire. I mean, this is what we're talking about. He basically lost his job in Cincinnati because he got a DUI. Then he was out of coaching, then got another chance at K-State for a year, and then got his dream job back at West Virginia, his alma mater. So I'm sitting here, I'm like, okay, so Bob Huggins, you didn't formally resign? Fine. Come on back. Boom. Fired. I don't know, like I said, all the legalese. That's what I call it. That's why the lawyers get paid a lot of money to sort through all that stuff. But to me, ladies and gentlemen, aren't you really tired of this? West Virginia's got to be tired of it. I can't imagine. Like, I would imagine every single, maybe not every single one, but I can't imagine how many people rolled their eyes when they read this story. When I heard this story, I read this story, I immediately rolled my eyes. I was like, good grief. And then I'm like, is this a true story? Is this a fake story? Because this seems to be too way off the wall. And this just comes across as a man that either has representation that's painting him in a bad light by doing this, but I would think Bob Huggins has encouraged him to do it and give him the green light to go after this. Bob Huggins, based on everything I've read and heard, he needs to get his life in order first. You need to get your stuff in order, man, before you can coach. I mean, listen, you resigned. You didn't retire, maybe? Okay, fine. Maybe you can get a job somewhere down the line when you straighten up your life. But it ain't going to be at West Virginia. And so I really feel for the coaching staff, including Josh Eilert. I feel for the president. I feel for the athletic director. Maybe there's a smoking gun I'm missing here. But everything that I've read, everything that I've listened to, everything that I've been able to pull up on this thing, it all points to this is a man that's now bitter. This is a man that just doesn't want to give up coaching, which I understand. He loves it so dearly. But if you love it so dearly, then why would you go out and get hammered in the middle of the day? Now, and drive. And people will immediately come back with, well, you don't think clearly when you're intoxicated. Well, duh. But you don't think clearly. You're addicted. You have an addiction. Okay, fine. He has an addiction. Go sober up. Go through all the step programs you need. Then reestablish yourself. Be clean for at least, I don't know, maybe a year. Be sober. And then next year, next offseason, if there's openings available, which there will be, go ahead and apply. And if some university wants to hire Bob Huggins as their head coach, whether it's a Division III, a Division II, NAIA, or a Division I school, whoever wants to hire Bob Huggins has the freedom to hire Bob Huggins. Whether it's Syracuse, whether it's North Carolina State, whether it's Stephen F. Austin, whether it's Bradenton Community College, I don't care. But To do all of this that he's done on his own accord, and then to have the audacity for him and this lawyer, when apparently other lawyers that have represented him has talked to West Virginia as recently as Friday about the next steps of the resignation and retirement, which West Virginia has tried to do everything they can to paint this as good of a light as they can for things that Bob Huggins did they didn't do, is mind-boggling. You want to argue, well, I didn't technically retire. Okay, fine. You can unretire. And if you never did retire, then you don't have to unretire. But this is crazy. And then you've got Bob Huggins' wife involved in this. So now you start to wonder, well, what's going on there in regards to did she actually? I don't know. It's confusing a little bit because I don't know how Bob Huggins hasn't sat down and talked with the athletic director and the president in a room going over all this stuff. Surely they have. And they agreed on something. Isn't when you talk right face to face and say, hey, I am going to resign. I am resigning. It's time for the university to move forward. I've created enough disgrace for this university in the last few months. It is time. And the best thing for this university is for me to step aside. That's man to man saying, I'm done. I don't know, man. It's sad. It's super sad. Bob Huggins is a hell of a coach. Great coach. Won 935 games. Been in the Final Four. He's won wherever he's gone. But this is like three, in my opinion. Well, I don't think anybody's going to argue with the first two. Bad decisions. Bad, bad mistakes. And he was going to get away with the first one. The second one, he might somehow get away legally because of weak laws in the state where it happened. So he got lucky there, possibly. He's lucky he didn't kill anybody. He's lucky he didn't hurt anybody. He's lucky he didn't get hurt. I mean, this is a man that seems to not understand what he's done, although he said he did. So is he talking out of both sides of his mouth? There's some major issues here that, to me, Coach Huggins has got to figure out on his own before he ever even thinks about being back on the sideline for anybody, let alone West Virginia. But I don't know about you. If you follow things in sports, and if you listen to the show, you probably do, you have to be just absolutely floored by that story in which Bob Huggins apparently thinks he should or wants to have his job back and that he didn't formally resign. So now the lawyers get involved. They'll make a lot of money on this thing, both sides. The university's clearly not going to let Bob Huggins come back and coach. So is this really worth all the negative publicity it's going to bring to Bob Huggins and the negative publicity it brings to the university? I mean, if you love the university so much, and if you care about yourself as well, you're really messing things up for both sides, aren't you? Maybe I'm got this all wrong. It's like a soap opera. It's almost like a written soap opera. You know, it'd be a great twist for a cliffhanger at the end of the season. He wants his job back. He didn't technically sign his resignation letter. He turned it in, but he forgot to sign it. Oh, well, then just bring him on back after we've redone the coaching staff, reshuffled people, brought in new assistants, appointed one of his assistants head coach. Oh, you know what? Let's just go ahead and rewind and erase all that. Here you go, Bobby. Here's your job back. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. You betcha. There's no way, no way Bob Huggins is going to be the coach of West Virginia ever again. Ever. If that happens, then there are no consequences to your actions anymore in this country. You can just do whatever the heck you want to do.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or SunflowerStateRadio.com.
And G.I. Joes jumping those hills with Luke and Bo, plastic cap guns and a swimming hole. Don't get no dirt on your church clothes. Win or lose, we cheer for the Braves. 10% in the offering place. Sunday chicken and a NASCAR race. Sure be nice to get back to that place. There was dirt on Daddy's clothes. But putting that bacon on mama's stove, dog barking in the yard at a truck we don't know. All we had was us. Had a little bitty house and a lot of love. We had it all when we didn't have much. 18 left it all behind. Chasing a girl, chasing a dime. Went so far trying to get mine. I can't see that old porch light that led me home at